Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you joining in, whether it be the telephone or online. I know lots of folks are tuning into this broadcast because of the topic we have. I want to start talk about that in just a minute, but I want to start off by saying welcome to the broadcast. It's the first of a kind. It's produced by mortgage bankers, for mortgage bankers, mortgage professionals, for mortgage professionals. We include brokers and credit unions and all that, but we're also the proud recipient of the Progress in Lending Innovation Award awarded earlier this year. Thank you so much to the folks at Progress in Lending. The hot topic this week is a hot topic. It's hot summer, nothing like a hot topic. Recent headlines. Have you seen them recently? The CFPB is taking legal action against a Utah lender, and we know that Utah lender, know the officers involved, and we're seeing quite a bit of interest. But one of the things that came out, and Kate Berry is going to be with us from American Banker, who is reporting on this, and then the one that is probably the writing the greatest, and so she's going to be with us a little bit later, along with our good friend and longstanding guest of her on the broadcast is Mitch Keiter, chairman of Wiener, Brodsky, and Keiter, a law firm, one of the advocates, I think one of the best advocates for our industry, fighting for our causes across all of the issues that are going on. And Mitch is one busy guy these days, so we're glad to have Mitch on a little bit later in the broadcast. So we'll be discussing that legal action. It is going to have, it could have, as Mitch was saying, was quoted by Kate in the article, could have far-reaching ramifications. And it's, I think the thing that probably got my attention the most out of everything that was quoted in that article is Mitch saying, this could be the first, and signaling the first of many legal actions down this line. So it's a hot topic today, hot topic we're going to have later on the broadcast. Both of them are on hold, ready to dive into this topic. We also have Alice Alvey with us this week. She's back, and so glad to have her. And we got the Profit Doctor in the house. How special to have him with us. Joe Farr is out on vacation. Well, he's not on vacation. He's actually at a LendingTree event. We're going to start off with his segment. But a special thank you goes out to our sponsors, United Guarantee and A La Mode. And thank you to them for making all of this possible, helping us bring this to tens of thousands of mortgage professionals that are listening each and every week. And we appreciate you telling others about it. Hey, by the way, I'm going to be speaking at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Luncheon this Wednesday. Be sure if you're in the Austin area, come out for the Austin Mortgage Bankers Association luncheon this Wednesday, August 8th. I'm speaking at it. Looking forward to that. Let's get to Joe and I spoke on Friday, and he allowed me to record some comments for you because last week was one crazy week. So here's Joe's comments that we recorded late Friday afternoon. Joe Farr, appreciate you taking some time this Friday afternoon to give our listeners an update on the markets. This has been a really wild week, Joe. What's going on? Dave.
It's been crazy. It's a lot of overreaction to economic events that miss a little bit. You know, pretty much all driven by how those economic events may or may not affect the Fed's purchase program. So I'll get into a little specifics here, but yeah, I thought it was interesting to point out that 3 days this week saw 1% swings in prices during the
Wow, that's
1%
amazing.
1% swings. Those are unusual, but to have three in a week is really unusual.
Very
so,
unusual. Yeah.
It was volatile to say the least. The interesting thing is we ended the week just about the same place we began the week.
Crazy. People with hedge positions just going nuts trying to manage that.
I know. Yeah, it's tough. Let's go through it almost day by day because it was really kind of interesting. Things were quiet Monday and Tuesday because there wasn't a lot of news, but things got a little crazy beginning Wednesday morning. You might remember Wednesday morning, ADP report came out, and it was better than expected. And then the second quarter GDP came out, and it, too, was better than expected. I don't think anyone's real proud of the number, but at least it was better than expected. And on that news, MBS prices fell about 50 basis points from where they opened the day. But then at 2 o'clock, the Fed statement was released. You know, this was the end of their 2-day meeting, and
right.
the statement. There was no press conference this time, but the Fed statement came out, and it comforted long-term fixed rate investors. And MBS prices recovered all their morning loss and ended up the day about a half a point up. So there's the first 1-point swing from early Wednesday until Wednesday afternoon. There was a 1-point improvement in prices.
Yeah, and mostly because they didn't talk about tapering.
Some people were expecting or maybe thinking that they would provide more clarity as to when they'll begin to taper. And in fact, they changed very little about
yeah.
what they said, and at least as it related to tapering, and indicated the economy might not be improving quite as quickly or as well as they thought it was just a month ago.
Yeah, the word modestly versus moderately was
right.
all over the news. You know, how they can hang on single words like that and the implications of it is just amazing. But the market
really is.
But the markets reacted. So then you had another swing the other direction.
Yeah. Well, then on Thursday morning, the ISM index came out, and it was very strong. It was one of the strongest ones in years. And the market just shot lower. It fell from, you know, opening near the, you know, where it ended the day on Wednesday to down 1%. And, you know, it started lower and just continued to go lower all day. So for the day, we lost 1% on Thursday. But then Friday morning's jobs report came out, and, you know, we all know that it was not as good as people were thinking. You know, the
right.
Consensus was for about 180,000, and I think some people, including myself, were thinking it might come in a little higher than that. And it came in short of that by about 20,000, and prior months were revised a little lower as well. So that, because of how everyone's trying to find out what the Fed's going to do based on what the economic results are, that created a very positive reaction in the market. And we shot up to about up 20, 30 seconds immediately on that news and have continued higher all day today. And we're currently up 1% today. So just an incredible amount of volatility and, in my estimation, overreaction to small misses of economic events.
Well, I think that just tells you how nervous about where things are at.
Until the Fed either actually describes when they're going to begin to taper and by how much, I think the market's going to continue to be volatile. It's going to continue to be hanging on every significant economic event. It's going to be watching for, you know, Fed speak and what they're saying. And certainly the next Fed meeting's not until the middle of September, which is where some people, in fact, the consensus would still say the tapering should come in September. The percentage of people feeling that way is probably lower today than it was yesterday, which is part of the reason we had the big rally. But it's going to continue to be volatile, I think, until we get some clarity on when they begin to pull out of that bond buying program.
As the markets are nervous and the volatility reflect to that. So let's look forward to what we have this coming week. You know, are we going to see more of the same?
No, it may feel like a bit like a vacation. There's nothing on the economic calendar that will have the same sort of effects that the events this week had. The only thing really on the calendar is ISM Services Index on Monday and then the jobless claims on Thursday. But you know, neither of those carry near the weight that the events this week did.
Yeah.
Now, there are 10-year and 30-year Treasury auctions next week on Wednesday and Thursday, and some of that nervousness may or may not come out in those auctions, and that could be market moving. And there are a number of Fed speakers who are set to make speeches during the week, and who knows, you know, as everyone's so focused on them, maybe one of those guys will say something that can move the market. But I don't expect a week near like we saw this week.
Thankfully so for the risk managers. A quick question here. The IMS index, which had such a dramatic effect on Thursday, how was that different from the IMS services report that we're going to see on Monday?
Well, the services report focuses just on the services sector. The ISM is a much broader measure, and so it's given a great deal more weight.
Okay.
The services is a lower-level index, but, you know, it still carries some weight. It will be scrutinized, and given the current market environment, there could be some reaction to how its measure comes out. I don't think that's going to have near the same effect as the miss that we saw to the upside on the ISM, the overall index?
Well, Thursdays are the jobless claims coming out. That could probably be the most significant day to watch. But you know what? It just takes something happening in a foreign country or some of the issues that could go on that are outside of our economic calendar that could be impacting it. And you just got to have a service like ABS Quoteline to really keep you alerted as it's happening. And you just live by it when you're sitting there parked in your phone and you're watching and listening to the volatility like we had this last week. You got to have a service like MBS Quoteline, folks. So, by the way, you're heading out this week. That's why you're not on the radio. You want to tell
us? I'll be at the Lenders One conference. Lenders One is a consortium of mortgage origination companies that they get together twice a year, and they're nice enough to invite us to come and show their members what our service can do, and gives us a chance to get to talk with and get to meet a number of people in some very good mortgage origination companies.
And you'll be up at Boston, if I understand correctly.
That's right.
All right. Well, safe travels to you, my friend. And
thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. By the way, Paul Mallow, we normally fit into the broadcast right about now from www.imfnews.com. Just got back from vacation. He says, Dave, say hi to Kate Berry. He used to work with Kate. He says, say hi to Kate and all our listener friends. I am so buried, I've got to get caught up. So he sends his greetings. We appreciate Paul being a part of the broadcast each and every week. There's so much in the headlines going on, and Alice Alvey tracks for us, as you guys know, that any regular listeners know Alice's contribution to the broadcast is just amazing with the legislative update. Alice, good to have you back, and hope you had some good time with your family. What do you have for us today?
Well, I did. I had a great time. Thanks very much, Dave. Yeah, it's good to be back. And, you know, there's always something going on. And right now the hot topic is FHA. So we're going to talk more about loan officer compensation in our next segments, which I'm really looking forward to hearing from Kate, the latest update, and, of course, Mitch's views on all of that. But so for my segment, I want to focus on what's going on with FHA. So FHA did publish a notice with comments due by September 9th, and they're really going through a review of their quality assurance plan. And it's focusing on four main topics. So it's not really a proposed rule where there's a lot of detail. It's just some, you know, bullet points to say, we would like your feedback on this because we're going to come up with a plan and we'd really like to get your feedback on the best approach for this. So one of the items is what type of loan defects should be subject to indemnification or other administrative actions. Now, an astute mortgage lender might say none, right?
Right.
I shouldn't ever have to pay, right? But we can't go that route. We have to be constructive, and certainly there are times where it's, you know, over the top and we recognize, but there has to be clarity. There has to be some really bright lines so lenders know what are the errors that specifically could potentially require an indemnification and various administrative actions. So they're looking for work on that, for feedback on that. And what format of a compare ratio is acceptable? So we all use the compare ratio right now, as we know, the comparison of our defaults and comparison to other lenders and national and different geographic comparisons. What number is reasonable? Currently, FHA uses 150% to determine if you can be part of the lender insuring program. Is that a reasonable number? Should it be lower? Should it be higher? And they're also looking at tracking defect rates. So this has been a hot topic in Fannie and Freddie QC, you know, what's your defect rate, defining a defect rate, material versus immaterial defects. And it looks like FHA is going to go down this road, not just with compare ratio, but just truly your QC defect, as well as how do you fit in with their defect, right? The post-endorsement technical reviews, and then coming up with a number to track there. So we'll see. It sounds like they want to have something similar to what Fannie and Freddie have, that, you know what, your defects have to be low. Check out FHA's recent report that they put out. Well, I guess it was actually published at the end of June, but most people probably didn't get their hands on it until the beginning of July. And that FHA Lender Insight report, that'll give you an idea of common errors that you find in FHA loans and see how your company stacks up. So that's a very well worthwhile read. It's the first issue, Lender Insight, lots of trend information on FHA QC. So the reform bill that is was just passed the Senate unanimously on the Reverse Mortgage Stabilization Act also has a matching House bill. This is going to make some big improvements to the reverse mortgages, but clamp them down just a little bit, but definitely I think some constructive ways that the industry is going to not surprised by, but ready for. And then we're watching the FHA Solvency Act. Congress is out now for a month. I don't know if that's good news or bad news on the FHA front, because we would like to see them move forward or not. But they are looking to make big changes. The main one that I'll close out here, Dave, is the one with FHA is going to have to align with QM. And right now, they are our product that's allowing higher DTIs and automated underwriting. So we're watching this very closely to see how much is going to be said in the bill, and then really what is FHA going to do at that point to try and implement some of this. FHA is going to start clamping down. We'll see in the future, you know, how much so on that DTI side especially. And also then on the servicing side, I know Joe was concerned about this. In that same bill, it's FHA wants to have the authority to publish a rule to be able to say we can tell a lender their loans have to go to a subservicer. If you're not doing a good job servicing, FHA wants to have some action. And I think in a previous show, Joe was concerned that he might have heard they were going to say, we can take it away from you. We want someone else to service it. It looks like the solution that they're trying to get down to is at least say, if you're not doing a good job, we're going to move it to a qualified subservicer who
is step two,
we'll
take
it
to someone else. Yeah. Yep.
Right, right, and not trying to get through transfer of servicing issues related to secondary. So they are talking about trying to find some action for those who aren't servicing FHA well. So watch. Also, Fannie Mae issued some new QC requirements. Be very careful about that. Your pre-funding QC now has to be in your reports with your post-closing QC. Watch that closely, and make sure you've checked that memo out too. So that's my update, Dave. On to the next segment. Well, thank you very much.
Folks, Alice, I don't know how lenders get along without your service. And like all, I believe the reason we have all of you on the radio is because of the value of the contribution to the industry that you make. And, folks, if you need to get a hold of Alice, has your phone number changed with the acquisition by Indicom?
Well, we still have our good old 800 number, 800-278-0200. My old email addresses of my mortgage emails all still work, but certainly our new one is alice.alvey, A-L-V-E-Y, at indicom.net.
Encourage you guys to get a hold of her. If you have any questions on it, Alice is just not only she has the ability to bring you the information and a lot of some stuff we don't particularly like to hear, but she delivers it in such a way that it is received by those that do hear. And that's probably, there's many reasons I'm a fan of Alice Alvey and the services she provides to our industry, but it's the method in which he delivers the news is probably what it is. Alice, thank you. It's good to have you back from vacation. And folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you back. We're going to go to Tony Garitano, another guy that's been out having some very vacation time, and then we're going to go to the Profit Doctor right after that. Tony, good to have you back on the broadcast, but I got to tell you, while you're away, the mice have been playing. I look at all of the activity going on as it relates to mergers and acquisitions. It's quite astounding. And the latest is announcement about Harlan. I've completely missed this. I was on vacation, and then I was traveling as soon as I got back from vacation. So give us an update. D&H acquired Harlan. Is that correct?
That's correct. They acquired Harlan for $1.2 billion prior to...
Did you say billion?
Billion with a B, Dave.
My old company. I started that in my... The essence of that in my garage. Okay. Well, glad someone's making some money off that old idea. Go ahead.
Yep.
Why did they do this? Why did they acquire it? What's the reasoning behind it, as far as you can tell?
Well, they had acquired MortgageBot prior for in excess
right.
of $230 million. They acquired Avista for $40
yes.
million. And the rationale for this latest acquisition of Harland was that they wanted to be one of the top four or five fintech companies within the mortgage space. They had been looking at several smaller acquisitions, but when they heard that Harland was available, they jumped at that acquisition to leapfrog some of the others and, you know, automatically be considered, you know, among the top five or six fintech companies in our space.
You know, I'm not terribly surprised that D&H is doing this in the sense that they're doing it. I think that makes some rationale, but the price does, quite frankly, put me back on my heels a bit, partly because I started that darn software many, many years ago. I mean, I don't take credit for where it's at. I can't. It's been out of it for many, many years. But the price, does that indicate where the price of technology is at? Or going?
Well, I think a lot of our friends in the technology space would like to think so.
Yes, for sure.
But
raises the bar for them. I think there'll be other companies going up for sale based on that price tag. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, well, Dave, I mean, I was very shocked that they acquired MortgageBot for $230 million and
right.
when they acquired Avista for $40 million. So I'm not sure that that's reflective of the actual value of any of those three companies. I mean, quite frankly, I was not surprised that any of those three companies were acquired, but the price tag to me seems very overinflated for all
yeah.
three of those companies. But that's, I mean, that's just my opinion.
Well, how does this change the landscape for the mortgage technology? What do you think?
I don't, honestly, I don't think that it does. I think that we basically
D&H is hoping they want to change the landscape, it sounds like, especially with those prices.
I think they do. I mean, and, you know, best of luck to them. I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of these acquisitions happen over the years. You know, obviously they want to come to market with a complete end-to-end solution.
Right.
I think that the proof is going to be in the pudding over the next 6 to 12 months as to how they deliver that. You know, we've seen a lot of acquisitions happen, and the companies get absorbed, management changes, and they're never really able to kind of put the different pieces together.
Right.
I hope that D&H, goes a different route, and they're very successful. I think what it does is, you know, it does what basically they had intended. It makes them, you know, one of the larger, fintech
yeah.
players for sure. But in terms of how, you know, their competitors react, I'm not sure that if I was a competitor, I would be particularly afraid of D&H,
no.
at
yeah.
least not in the short term. We'll see what they do with it in the long term.
Yeah, that's a big question. And we don't have time to get into it because I want to save us a bunch of time to get in this really super hot topic today. But I think another acquisition we'd like to talk about next week when you're on the broadcast is a mortgage cadence acquisition by Accenture. I was in Accenture's office. They're a client of ours that as they were announcing it. So it's quite an interesting story. I can't wait to get into that. Lots of acquisition activity going on in the mortgage space. We appreciate you commenting each and every week. Tony, it's good to have you back on the broadcast.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
People can get a hold of Tony at 203-529-3131 or Tony at progressinlending.com. Check out their website, www.progressinlending. Thank you, Tony. Have a great week. Profit Doctor, I want to get your thoughts. I think that's just really fascinating, the price tag on Harlan got out of that old Interlink software platform. But let's. I know we've got so much to talk about today. And it's good to have you back. And I also say a special thank you, Andy, because you're not feeling that well. So it's good to have you on the broadcast, especially slightly under the weather.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. Well, I can start with the D&H acquisition. All of these, you know, we do M&A all the time. And we get involved in the
right.
purchase price and the valuation of commercial banks, mortgage banks, you know, all of this. And so it always comes down to multiples of earnings. If you talk to Wall Street, they're always talking about trailing EBITDA. I mean, EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And so basically
right.
it converts a normal company into cash flows. For mortgage companies, it's not as accurate as a measure. Earnings are probably just a straight-up earnings are better. But they look at like 3x trailing EBITDA, you know, 2x earnings. Sometimes they'll convert that into multiples of book, but that's really a misnomer because it depends on what book is. It's almost always driven by cash flows and expectation of marketing opportunities in the future. So they obviously believe that
the future
earnings opportunity is.
Yeah, I was going to say, explain trailing EBITDA. I thought it would be leading EBITDA. I mean, so explain trailing EBITDA.
Well, trailing EBITDA is what's actually happened. It's a legitimate
yes.
baseline to establish a future forecast. If you've got a
yes.
volatile trailing EBITDA, then that's a real challenge because what do you know? Then how do you know upon which you're basing your forecast? You want to base a forecast always on some sort of legitimate footing, some sort of baseline that you can say, okay, this is really what operations does based on these variables. And then from there, you can then forecast into the future what you think the earnings will be based on these changes and based on synergies and market presence and all this other stuff to then come up with the cash flow that then drives value. So anyway, that's where those come from. So
switch gears because there's so much more. We'll talk about that next week when we get Tony back on talking about the various acquisitions. Go ahead. Let's talk about because this is what Mitch and Kate are going to be talking about is really should be getting everyone's attention. And I know it's gotten your
exactly. It has, absolutely. The CFPB lawsuit against Castle & Cook and why that happened and what that means I think is very, very significant for the industry as a whole. And we need to think about it, understand it, and learn from it. And one of the things I wanted to point out in watching this and watching how mortgage bankers often operate and how mortgage bankers will push the envelope, and if their competitor is doing something differently, then they'll do the same thing, thinking that, well, they can't sue us all. Well, we'll see what Mitch says about that. But,
think again.
The thing I wanted to mention is that in working with commercial banks and having spent most of my career in commercial bank-owned mortgage lending, in a commercial bank environment, the focus is more about do it right the first time, make sure the regulatory pieces are in place. And mortgage bankers tend to complain about that regularly, that's it's too slow, commercial banks take too long to make a decision. And one of the quotes that Angelo Mazzello is attributed to is, he used to say, unless you're going so fast that it feels like the wheels are coming off, you're not going fast enough. And that's how he ran Countrywide, and that's typical for mortgage bankers. But let me make a comment about that. If you run your business where you're going so fast that you feel like the wheels are coming off, you're almost assuredly going to fail a CFPB audit.
Yeah.
That may be the way mortgage companies were managed in the past. That may have been the way Angelo built Countrywide. And in some respects, thanks to Countrywide, that is not the way business is today. The CFPB's new sheriff's in town, and things have to be different. It has to be more like a commercial bank where you make certain that the pieces are in place. You make certain that the compliance is in place. And when I mean compliance, I don't just mean that people are signing the right HUD-1. I mean compliance all the way through the organization, all of the aspects, everything from vendor management, service level agreement validation, the entire organization has to be managed is subject to guidelines from the OCC, I mean the CFPB and then by extension the OCC, that are going to be brought over to mortgage banks. So, you know, at this point it kind of becomes beating a dead horse, but we just got to be really aware of this. Things are different. It's going to be different. It's new. It's a new world. Like it or not, the CFPB is here to stay. And they've got teeth. They've got great big teeth. They've got a big stick, and they're not afraid to use it. And so slow down. Get your act together. Everything from the doc side, which is where people think about compliance, they think about the origination documents and the disclosures and all that. It's much more than that. It's, of course, obviously LO Comp, which we're going to talk about today, but it also extends all the way through. Do you have your vendor management structured correctly? Do you have the appropriate risk ratings for your various vendors? If you're going to hire a subservicer, have they been validated? Are you validating your service level agreements you have with your various vendors? All this stuff is part of this as well. So it's a new world. Give us a call. We'll talk about it more.
Can't wait for it. I want to allow as much time for Mitch and Kate coming up here right after the break. Andy, thank you so much. Especially, I know you're really excited to get on involved in this conversation with Mitch and Kate. We'll be right back, folks, right after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us, everybody. What we're about ready to talk about should have everyone in the industry on this broadcast, downloading and listening to it probably multiple times. Kate Berry is the American Bankers Consumer Finance Reporter. She's been reporting on financial issues for a long time. She was a reporter at Orange County Register back in my old Orange County days when I lived back there. Loved reading her articles then, and the Associated Press and Dow Jones Newswires. She began her media career, as a clerk, a lowly clerk there at the New York Times. But boy, has she made her name for herself here in the mortgage world. She reports on key articles. I've had the privilege of calling Kate not only someone I read regularly and a resource, but also a friend. I'm glad to have her on the broadcast. Kate, we're going to get right back to you. I want to introduce also Mitch Kider, someone that's no stranger to our broadcast. He's an attorney, author, residing in Washington, D.C., metropolitan area. He's been actively involved in housing policy arena for over 38 years, folks. And Mitch is currently the chairman and managing partner of Wiener Brodsky Kider, a law firm, national law firm in Washington, D.C. area, specializing in representing financial institutions, residential home builders, real estate settlement providers, and a host of others. Most relevant to today's discussion, Mitch represents his clients in investigative enforcement matters related to CFPB, HUD, VA, Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac, and the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission. He's one busy guy. He knows his stuff, and we are thrilled to have him here. He's a powerful advocate, an effective advocate for our industry, and one that we are proud to call a friend of our firm, as well as this radio broadcast, and just great to have both of you on the broadcast. Let's start with Kate. Kate, I want to make sure I got your mic on and you're here.
I'm here.
Good to have you here. Mitch, we got your mic on and everything good?
I'm here. Everything's great.
All right. Mitch, good to have you back. Kate, I want to start off with you talking about this. I want to start the broadcast off by getting an update on what is your perspective, or if there's, you've been reporting on this. This story broke. You're one of the first ones to come out with an article on this. Significant, and it should have been an article that should have just gone off in everyone in the industry's radar, because I think, as you accurately quoted Mitch on the article, it is signaling possibly the first of many actions, and I want to start with you giving our listeners that may not have caught it a quick update and then how they can go and get your article. Kate?
Sure, yeah. So
We think that it might be the first of many actions. I mean, we really don't know. And as many people know, the CFPB filed a federal complaint against Castle & Cook, a mortgage bank, saying that they paid the quarterly bonuses to loan originators who steered borrowers to higher-cost loans.
That's what they're alleging, yes.
That's the allegation. And we really don't know. I mean, we don't know. The investigation went on for a year, so we don't know a lot of the details here. But I think what's very clear here is this idea of the CFPB coming in and sort of cracking down, if you will, on non-bank mortgage lenders and the idea, at least in this case, of not having a written policy somehow that matched their bonus policy.
Right.
And whether that was the case or not, we don't really know. I mean, I imagine Castle & Cook is, their attorneys are talking to the CFPB, and they're probably in negotiations over this now. But it does send a very strong message to the industry, and I think puts the industry definitely on notice that other actions could follow.
I think that is probably the most important part is you say in the first sentence of the article that published on July 29th, I encourage everyone to get this article, read it, is the first step in what could be, and we stress the word could be, a string of enforcement actions against mortgage originators. And I think a lot of people, Andy Profit Doctor talks about this all the time, a lot of people publish a policy and then they do, as he said earlier in the broadcast, they do what they need to stay competitive in the market. Mitch, you see both the good and the bad. You see when things go wrong. You see how many people are trying to do it right. Love to get you to weigh in before we start diving into the details of this. I'd like to have you weigh in on this whole story in a macro sense.
You know, this story really is something that has been long awaited for, not necessarily Castle & Cook, and Kate's absolutely right. We really don't know what happened over there. We've only heard one side of the story, and that's the CFPB.
Exactly. That's all we've heard. And I don't know, Mitch, if you're cutting in and out because of your side or if it's just on my side here, but we haven't heard the other side of it. And Andy, I want you to weigh in real quickly with some comment. These people are not unfamiliar to you. You know them. And I think to put this in context, I think it's important to tell people your experience with them. While we didn't advise them having to do with their LO comp plan, you know these guys. They're not fly-by-night guys.
Not at all. No, both Matt and Buck. Hello? Both Buck and Matt are good guys. Matt's real sharp, run the company, help it grow, very well connected, understands technology, is a good manager. Buck Hawkins is a very well-known secondary marketing guy. He ran the he's very active in the California Mortgage Bankers Association. He was on point to manage the Western Secondary Conference this past year. These guys are not slouch guys. They're not. They're well known. They're good mortgage bankers. And like Kate said, we don't know what really happened. I haven't contacted them. And even if I did, they couldn't say anything anyway. But
right.
This isn't just some fly-by-night broker to banker conversion that got grabbed. These are well known, well respected, well capitalized. What generally speaking is known as a well run company. Now as the dust settles on the truth of what this suit reveals will maybe affect that, but my opinion of them, at least as it relates to their secondary marketing activities and their accounting activities, that they're well run.
Sure.
Kate, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, these guys have been around a long time. They know what they're doing. They've been sources of mine for a long time. You know, I think it's easy to read a lot of things into it, and one thing to look at is you know, Castle & Cook is a privately held mortgage bank. It's owned by David Murdoch, who heads Doyle Foods. There could be a view from the industry of we're going to go after a big fish, and they could absorb whatever fine the CFPB would go after them, and that might be part of it. But one doesn't know also on the CFPB side what they're seeing. I think the thing is how this plays out is going to be watched clearly by the industry, and also how the CFPB goes about these actions. If a non-bank lender is willing to comply with what they say, if they're willing to restructure their, you know, bonus plan. Does the CFPB agree to that, or do they then turn around and say, no, that's not good enough, we're going to nail you with, you know, with these fines? I think there's a lot sort of moving parts here.
Great
and also,
point. Great point.
The other aspect is there's always been a belief that mortgage banks had two sets of books, one set of book for the regulators and one set of books that's really here's how we run the business. And I think that is what the CFPB is trying to go after. I don't know whether this company fits that profile, but, you know, we'll see over time.
Mitch, then I want to get off to Alice, but go ahead, Mitch.
I think the CFPB is truly trying to send this message to the industry.
Yeah.
And that is, listen, there are a lot of you that are out there that have expended great sums of money and resources and are trying your very best to comply. And there are a number of competitors that you have that you complain about. And the CFPB gets complaints about competitors, as do other agencies all the time as well. And some, they believe, are not in compliance itself. And I think one of the messages that the CFPB is trying to send out in this particular case is we're going to try to level this playing field. We now have these regulations in place, and we're going to make sure that everyone understands how to comply with these particular regulations. That's not to say that Castle & Cook did not comply with it, but the allegations that they have out there is that this company did not. And so I think they're sending a message to two sides of the industry. One side of the industry that's upset because they have loan originators and loan officers and they're getting recruited away by certain companies that have practices that sometimes are questionable. And another side of the industry that, in fact, is on the competitive side and they're playing it a little fast and loose. The allegations of this complaint is that Castle & Cook is on that side, that they were playing it fast and loose. Now, that really is contrary to their reputation. It's contrary to the reputation of the two individuals that got named in this lawsuit. It's contrary to the reputation of the company itself. So as the case goes through, factually what happened is going to be very, very interesting to see. But what the CFPB is doing here, and you're going to see it in other areas as well, you're going to see it in the area of data integrity. You're going to see it. Set an example of it. That's what they're trying to do.
I think they're trying to, and I think one thing, and Alice, you see this. I mean, you have been closely affiliated with Jan Wetzel of Wetzel Trot for years, and how many times have we all talked about being, you know, when we're sitting around having a glass of wine at one of the conferences, that they have a policy, but they don't necessarily follow it. Or, in this case, what Kate's saying in the article, the second paragraph of the first sentence in the first paragraph, she says, they steered borrowers into high-cost loans, but did not have a written policy describing the bonuses. And I think, Mitch, this goes a lot to what you're saying. But, Alice, you see evidence of this. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, just to kind of steer it away from that individual company and just say as an industry as a whole, tried to get on the bandwagon of make sure I have a written policy and I buy it off the shelf and I replace your company name here with my company name, you know, and then I don't really check that I'm really following it. Or I make a change in my bonus plan and I don't necessarily have that plan match up with what's in print. And, of course, the paperwork. You know, I asked Mitch ahead of the show, you know, if and maybe this is a question for Andy Schell, too, but it's can you ever really 100% document that the profit that the company made and that ultimately went to the loan officers in a bonus structure didn't somehow come from profit of interest rates? Because I run into bank customers all day long that their attorneys will tell them, you can never pay a bonus. And I'll say, well, that's not what the law says. You know, the law says you could structure a plan. But there are a lot of folks out there of the opinion that, but you can never really get to drawing that bright line. And I guess I'd like to know the, you know, folks' opinion on this call, see what they think.
Mitch?
Well, yeah, I think the CFPB actually has recognized that. And so the regulation that was just finalized a couple of months ago and that will become effective in January changes the rule a little bit. Because what the CFPB will now allow are some bonuses based on profitability. There are limitations to it. Number one, a bonus that's based on profitability can be no more than 10% of the overall compensation for that loan originator, and it can't come directly or indirectly from their own production. So in other words, it's got to come from the unit or the corporate entity that it's working for overall. So they've allowed a little bit of profitability in there. They also have a provision that says if you're a loan originator and you're originating 10 or fewer loans per year, in fact, you can get paid on profitability. So
but
I think
if I'm a lender, profits only come from interest rates, right? Where else do profits come from if I'm a lender and I'm not a bank?
Well, they come from interest rates. They come from fees. That's exactly right. So they've opened that door a little bit. But today, that rule doesn't exist. It doesn't become effective until January of 2014. And so the question today is, can you really pay someone and say it's not based on profits? I mean, ultimately, you can't pay your employees if you're not making any money. If you're losing money, if you don't have money along those particular lines, eventually you're not going to be able to pay your employees. It's just so long a company can go along those lines. So where does the money come from? It comes from profits itself. But what the rule says is you have to pay them on the same basis. So if you're an individual loan originator, regardless of whether or not you've got an FHA loan, you've got a conventional loan, regardless of what your margins are on these particular loans, you're going to pay them on the same basis. And I think that's the point that the CFPB is trying to make over here as well. Obviously, you're making some profit, and your ability to pay bonuses is coming because you're able to make profits. But they don't want it to be specifically profit-driven on an individual loan originator basis, because that's what causes steering into more profitable loans.
Mitch, I'd like to. I want to go to Kate with a question on that. And then Andy, jump in. But because I'm old and I don't want to forget my question, Mitch, do you think part of the problem is that the CFPB is not well informed on all of these issues that are going on, or do you think they've done their job of doing their homework and they're going after well-studied, well-thought-out issues? I mean, they're taking on issues that have merit. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it began with a regulation which the regulators did not do a good job of informing the industry of what the expectations are and how those regulations are to be read. So that's the first problem that they ran into. Then now you have the CFPB coming along. Remember, this was a Federal Reserve Board rule, but now you have the CFPB coming along, and they're saying, we're going to enforce these regulations. And the reality is, there are a lot of players in the industry that don't understand these regulations. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of lawyers that don't fully understand these regulations because there are certain ambiguities that are simply built into it. So I think that becomes very problematic. Now, apparently the CFPB has been investigating this particular matter for quite some time. So they looked into it. They must believe that this is a very clear issue in this particular case, because this is the first one that they've brought. And you would think that they're going to be careful in the first one that they bring. But who knows? We'll find out.
Yeah, Kate, I'm going to run over to Andy, but Kate, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you raise a good point, Mitch, which is a lot of people don't understand the rules. And I do know of lenders that have gone to the CFPB and said, okay, here's our comp plan, approve it, or tell us if this is correct. And they won't necessarily do that. So that raises an issue, which is, well, then what do you do if you're a lender? Then you have to go out and, you know, hire lawyers and consulting firms, and even then you don't know. And I think they all want some certainty that says, here's our comp plan. Tell me if this is acceptable. If they're not going to say that, I don't know what you do then. And I will say this just on Castle & Cook. My understanding is their funded pipeline, the interest rate on their loans was actually lower or below the national average. So it kind of is hard to understand how they would have been accused of upselling. And also, if the CFPB is asking for, you know, I think it's something like $9 million in bonuses that were paid out over 2 years, are they just wiping out the entire amount of bonuses that had been paid? And how does that work? How does the fine match what the allegations are? And does it actually go to borrowers, or is this something that the regulator just keeps for themselves. I mean, it's one thing if you're saying borrowers were harmed, we're giving some certain amount of money back to the borrowers. I don't know if that's a process that's going to go on here.
Well, they're asking for both in this particular case. In the complaint, they're asking
for
certain
relief. For both.
One is in the form of, one's in the form of restitution, and
right.
I think what they're saying is they want borrowers to either I don't think
how
restitution.
How does that work? How do you go to
the
all the borrowers?
Amount. Yeah, I mean, restitution really is what interest should they or would they otherwise
right.
have gotten. It's a very difficult calculation. And the penalties themselves, though, those would go to the CFPB.
Yes.
Well, can I circle back here for a second, Dave? I know we're hitting time limits.
Yes. Yeah, we are. But I want to get to some solutions, Mitch. So go ahead, Andy, by all means. We've got time for this.
Well, real quick, and on Lickin' on Lending, we give thoughts and opinions that are ours alone. It's for people to implement as they see fit and based on their own organization. Al was raising the point that what is profit, and you can't pay bonus on profits. And obviously, you can't have profits without having gain on sale and loan fees. Mitch was talking about that. Well, there's some ways you can, and in the future, you're going to be able to when this new proposed rule comes into effect, but it's not in effect yet today. So there seems to me there's this gray area around bonuses as it relates to LO comp. And frankly, from my perspective, I would not do it. I just wouldn't do it. Follow the rule exactly. Don't push the envelope because we don't know what's going to happen yet. Until the new rules are out, I wouldn't go there. There's too much risk.
Thoughts, Mitch? Too conservative?
I think there's a fair amount of risk with bonuses, but I do think that is pretty conservative. I do think, and this is something that Alice and I were talking about earlier, I do think that you can set up a bonus structure that is fully compliant. Number one, you need to make it part of the compensation agreement itself. It needs to be in writing. And number two, you can, in fact, base it on purely quality-based elements. You can base it on a pull-through rate. You can base it on timeliness of getting your documents in and timeliness, along those particular lines of getting the information correct along those lines. It's tough to get it exactly right, but can it be done? Sure, it can be done, and actually a bonus can be used as a good incentive to have loan officers get this right. This case is a little different. What they seem to be saying is, it's somewhat similar to a point bank. They seem to be saying that a company was in fact paying those loan officers if in fact they were pricing up or if they were pushing someone into a higher priced loan itself. Point banks, they have made absolutely clear, are not legal. And they said it again in this final rule, the one that becomes effective in January. If you look at the preamble, it says, we don't see any way that a point bank is something that's legal. So they're saying a couple of things over here. You know, you said you wanted to get to, you know, what can be done along these lines. There are a couple of things. Number one, recognize that point banks just don't work. You can't say to someone, you can price up, you can price down, but I'm going to pay you more if you're pricing up. You can simply not say that. That's number one. Number two, you need to have written compensation agreements, and they have to be very specific so that you can come back when they look at your plan, when they look at what you paid your loan officers, and you could say, it is right there in the agreement itself. And finally, number three goes really to something that Andy said, which is absolutely right, but actually Billy Joel said it best in one of his songs, and that is, when it comes to compliance today, though, what he said, not about compliance, but otherwise, is get it right the first time, that's the main thing. Get it right the next time, that is not the same thing. And that's what's happening in the industry today.
That's good, Mitch. I like it.
I love it. Kate, as we go, we've got to wrap this up here in a few minutes. First of all, keep us posted on all these articles that you're writing. Keep us posted. I'd love to have both of you back on this broadcast. We're only scratching the surface. But, Kate, give us your thoughts as we kind of get ready to close this segment out.
Well, you know, obviously I think everybody is going to watch this case. And you're right. Mitch says you have to have your plan in writing. I actually think the CFPB is almost going a little further by saying, explain to us your plan. It may not only just be in writing. Explain how the plan works so we know what you're doing. I think it's almost a little bit further than that.
And it's amazing to me, Kate, how many people have a policy, and we go in and do warehouse due diligences. We do all these due diligences on companies. We're in there looking at them and consulting to them, and we say, explain us your plan. And we get this, well, let me read it. I'll get back to that tomorrow.
Right.
And that's
that is a weakness
in our industry.
Absolutely. And it shouldn't be dismissed because there's no doubt that LO Comp was a main failure leading up to the crisis. I just think that now they're finally getting to it, and so everybody is on alert about it. And it was a weakness. It definitely created many of the problems leading up to the financial crisis.
Now, wouldn't you say that we have to be specific in those plans? Shouldn't those things be specific in the plan? Like, I know there's the cap on the 10%, but if you're going to actually set out a plan, you've got to say it's this percentage of revenue, or this percent of total income, or this is the actual approach we're using to determine the quality grade. Is that you can't just say some fluff words about, yeah, as long as you have great quality, you're going to meet your 10% bonus, and then there's no true measurement of it. I think that's something lenders have to have a heads up about. Realistic, hardcore ways to measure these items that are a part of the bonus plan, and you've got the documentation.
And on that point, sorry, Dave, or Mitch,
go
real
ahead.
Quick, when I say no bonus plan, I'm talking about profit-based bonus plan. That's the thing that makes me concerned. If you want to do pull-through-based, you want to do quality-based, you want to do document file content quality-based, just so there's an objective measure other than profit, then I'm okay with that. I just think trying to tie it to profit gets messy because there's no way to tie it to profit unless it's having some level based on gain, and if it's based on gain, it's going to lead to steering. That's my issue.
We are absolutely on the same page on that, Andy. That's exactly right. I agree with you.
Okay.
Well, I tell you, folks, you got to have Alice reviewing it, checking what's going on, have the profit doctor come in and validate all. Everyone's doing everything right. But it starts with getting solid legal counsel, not just – I mean, and Mitch, I just got to tell you, folks, I've watched Mitch at work on behalf of clients that he's represented. There is not a better fighter in your corner. And when it comes to these kind of things, you have CFPB in one corner, and it looks like the cage fighting that goes on. If there's going to cage fight, I'm going to have Mitch in there fighting for me. Mitch, I just value so much what you do. And not only that, what's so fitting about that is you do kickboxing as an exercise, a way to stay in shape. So you exercise down the lines of what you do for our industry. And I value you so much for being the advocate and taking time, both you, Kate, taking time out of this. Kate reporting these things, bringing them out in a really well-balanced way, and Mitch, you coming on and sharing the perspective. We are going to track this. We're going to have both of you back and talk about this on a regular basis. But I want to say, Mitch, thank you so much out of your busy schedule. And Mitch, I want to make sure everyone knows that it's now Wiener Brodsky Kiter. Seidman, that's
right.
Not in the name anymore, and I want to make sure that. Has that changed the website address of where people go to find you?
No, they can still use the same website address, WBSK.com, or they can use the website address, which is VWBKfirm.com. They both work.
And also get a hold of you at the office. They can call you directly if you want to give them your phone numbers.
Sure. They can actually call me directly, and it's 202-557-3511. I'd love to hear from people.
He actually answers his phone and talks to people. It is outstanding. But if he's busy, he's got the best assistant. Kathleen is just outstanding in the background. Mitch, thank you so much for being with us. One thing I'll say as we go out the window, Mitch, is you were saying something at the beginning of the broadcast before we went live about some of the lenders that are kind of saying we worked hard to get it right and we feel confident we got it right. I think a word of caution goes out to those that some might have the tendency or might have the temptation to look down their nose at this whole situation. Be careful on it because this is something that I don't think is going away. And though pride goes before a fall, and I think we have to be very careful, we should be all seeing and studying this. Pay attention. Don't assume you got it right, folks. Mitch, Kate, thank you so much for being on the broadcast. Big thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
And of course, Andy and Alice, appreciate you both being here each and every week with your analysis and your thoughts of everything. Great, great perspective. I hope everyone will be back with us next week. We are bringing some members of the Mortgage Action Alliance to us, And there's some big announcements coming up, and they're going to be announcing it on Lickin' on Lending next week. So we're going to have the Mortgage Action Alliance group, several representatives on the broadcast. So be there. And for those that are in the Austin area, come listen to me speak. I'm looking forward to talking about this broadcast, taking it to another level. And they're at the luncheon at the Austin Mortgage Bankers Association. Appreciate you being with us each and every week. Have a great week, everyone. Tune in and tell others about the broadcast. Have a great one. And look forward to being with you next week. Oh, check out the website, lickinlending.com. Special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantee and Alamode. Have a great one, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.